This is Janet Gowan welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Today's guest is D.M. Smith, and I'm going to go to you in a second, but I just want to say to everybody that we've kind of narrowed down a certain aspect and direction of her life because truth is she's done so much and so many different things. It's just too hard to do it all. And I know that you did work on Wall Street, and you started a Toastmasters club there, and you're doing management, theatrical management. And we met because you came here with Hank Garrett a couple of weeks ago, and looking at you, and Hank was talking, and I could see that there was something that you had to share. So I asked her to come back, and here she is. Talk about early life. I'm fascinated with on the farm.
Thank you, Janet. Yes, I'm a farm girl. And coming into fashion, people always look at me and say, how could you be a farm girl?
Because you look so Parisian. So well, talk about your first few years.
Well, first few years was driving a tractor. I started when I was 6 years old. I tried to be my father's boy. He had 3 girls, and for a farmer, that is not good. And I did pretty good, and he gave me a horse when I was 8 and a half years old named Patches, and he had belonged to a cowboy. He had he could do tricks. He could roll over. He could sit up like a dog
in
Idaho on the farm. I was 8 and a half years old, and from a pioneer family on the Snake River.
Okay, so can I ask about that part? Because I don't know any pioneer families. How did your family get here, and from where? And did they go right to Idaho?
No, they're mostly from Swedish on my father's side and English on my mother's side. And my grandfather, he was really old by the time I was born, but he was what you'd call the original explorer, I guess. He worked in the forest and the mining in Idaho, and then he heard about a patch of land on the Snake River that was open for development and was going to be the next capital of Idaho.
So he had his eyes towards something big and urban and sophisticated.
Well, yes, he did. So he came down, and they were giving away 40-acre allotments at the time.
Wow.
Homesteads, they'd call it. And so he came down from northern Idaho, and he got somebody to stay on the land. You had to have a fire going all the time.
To show your intent that was really, you weren't some,
So the interesting thing was that he had that going, and then he met my grandmother, who was the daughter of another Swedish family. Mm-hmm. There was at least 20 years difference between them. They married, and so I'm really from two pioneer family backgrounds.
Okay.
And I didn't find that out till later as a kid, growing up on the farm, driving the tractor, working.
Did you like it? I mean, do you have fond memories of it? Or because I remember yesterday you were chatting about you couldn't wait to get off.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Daddy put me to work on the fields, and I would pick potatoes. They would let off school so that we could work in the fields at that time. I think it was a week or two off, and we drew a lot of potatoes, as you can imagine. And I can remember picking potatoes. You had a 100-pound sack dragging behind you, and those were great memories. Looking back, at the time, they were not.
Yes, okay. So what were you thinking at the time? I mean, what pulled you to leave?
I think I wanted new horizons, and I wasn't going to get it there.
But did you know what your talents were?
No, I didn't. I learned to sew when I was 6 years old, because that's what you do. You learn to become a good wife and mother through 4-H groups. So I did that pretty well, and then I started leading a 4-H group, I think, when I was 12, I think. And then I got to go to Moscow, Idaho. It's in the northern part, and there was a big thing up there for 4-H, and they asked me to model. Mm-hmm. By that time, I think I was 14, and I thought, oh, wow, there's another life out there.
Okay. And from there, how did you finally come to leave? What drew you out?
The day after graduation, my older sister had already moved to California, and she'd arranged it so I could go to college down here. They had a wonderful program. In Idaho, it was very expensive, and my parents could not have sent me to college. And I had been in a beauty pageant, and I didn't win. Had I won, I would have gotten a full-year scholarship at Moscow, Idaho. So I was devastated. Well, anyway, my sister said, why don't you come down here and we'll get you into college. And that's how I ended up. Now, when I left Daddy, he stayed on the farm, and Mama came down with me and my sister Sally. And when I said goodbye to Daddy, I remember him saying to me, "Honey, you got to stretch your wings." But I had no idea that I wouldn't be coming back very soon.
So he encouraged you to follow what you could do.
Yes.
Oh, that's really nice. And how did that translate into your fashion career? Or didn't it right away?
No, not at all. I came down to go to college, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. And you can imagine a country girl coming to California. Very, very difficult adjustment.
What was hardest?
Just
year, may I ask what year it was?
No, you can't.
Oh, that's what I didn't know if I couldn't.
Can't.
Okay. Go ahead.
I once heard a very famous woman ask her age, and she said, "A woman who tells her age, never trust them. They'll tell you anything."
Okay.
So I go by that.
I had a feeling that was okay. But it was not like in early California days. I mean,
It wasn't Pioneer. No.
Right. Okay.
No, Janet. No.
So California was full humming with movie industry, and yes, of course. And you knew that.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes. No horse and buggies, things like that.
Go ahead.
When I got down here, I got into school, and it was a hard adjustment. I was always a good student, but it didn't show it when I was here. So I started working a few jobs, quit school a couple of times, got back in, and met people who encouraged me that I did have a brain and I needed to use it. Went to school, and at this time, I think that I had went to a junior college, the wonderful junior colleges here in California, and I got a chance to go to some house tour in Beverly Hills for Farm Girl. That was really cool. It happened to be Edith Head's
house. Oh, my goodness.
House,
really?
You know, the famous costume designer.
Yes.
So I got her ear.
How did you get that opportunity?
Through finding these tours with houses and things.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Because I always seemed to want to look to these cool places in California. I mean, wasn't that
and
where everything happened?
You knew who she was.
I certainly
did.
Oh,
okay, good. All right.
So I asked her. I said, "I won a design award. What do you think I should do? I want to go I want to just make my life, and I'm not sure what to do." She said, "Well, I suggest that you go to UCLA." And she said, "That's where I went." So I pursued it. I already had my bachelor's by this time.
I see.
And no, I didn't. I just had the first degree.
But
so
you were,
I tried
you were on
to
the road. You knew what you were directed.
No, not at all.
Not at all. Not self?
No.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, she suggested that I go someplace that had a fashion area. UCLA, they had closed theirs. Mm-hmm. I found Long Beach State University. And once there, I won a design award. And when I got out of college, I thought, wow, there's so many things I want to do, but what do I do? So I went to a fashion school, Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising. They enrolled me immediately, a very expensive school.
Mm-hmm.
But I did that for about a year.
How did that – what was your first line of clothing? How did you start? I'm always curious how people start things.
The main way I started, I worked very hard for a woman who was well-known in her day, and I was her assistant, and she was very difficult. She'd make you do things six times over.
The
but
design
it was
or the sewing or what?
A pattern making. Mm. But she was a very well-known designer, a European designer in California. But it's a great way to learn something when you have to be with a tough taskmaster. And after designing during the school year, they have you work as interns. I worked with her. Mm-hmm. And then when I graduated, I worked with as a designer with a national company. They did children's clothing. And they took me under their wing, and that's kind of how I started.
And then you had your own store.
Not until a little while after that I realized I don't like working for people. So I started my own business just like that. Not a good idea.
So I'm just curious. You find a place to lease, and how did you get your clothing made? You find people to sew it for
you? I found
you.
People to sew, and there was a designer who had been my mentor at FIDM. And I asked him to come and make my patterns. And that's how it all started. And he made me realize, wow, I could make this happen. I remember the first time I was in Women's Wear Daily, he called me and he said, "Have you seen the news yet?" I said, "No." He said, "Well, look at it." He said, "I couldn't be more happy if it was myself."
And that's, the name of the store was?
My company was Deanna Marie of California.
And
or DM. Actually, it came to be Deanna of California.
And where was it?
On Hollywood. No, Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood. Crossroads of the World.
That must have been really something. And your parents knew this, of course. What were they saying about your success?
They worried about me. Daddy on the farm, and Mama was kind of pleased, because I think she would have loved to have done that. In her day, she couldn't have. She came and worked with me for a year.
Ah, what did she do?
She did the books, anything that needed to be done.
Oh, nice. So did she have the same talent? I mean, you said you learned to sew when you were little. She taught you?
No, I was in the 4-H group. That's how you learn to sew, cook and sew to be a good wife, which I knew I would be not.
What made you think you would be not?
I didn't like it.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to get to the big city.
Good for you. And what happened after that? You were in London for a while?
Mm-hmm.
Talk about
yes.
that.
Yes. Well, I had my own business, and then people came to me to be a part of them. I did that for a year. I once again hated working for people. I realized it was important for my growth, but sometimes you don't use the common sense. It doesn't work for some people. It didn't for me. Then I met another person who designed he manufactured for Volume Junior Line, and he became my mentor there, and I was what he called magic. And we developed this line, and it became the third biggest in the country.
Well, I saw those photographs of your designs. They're gorgeous. I wish we could see those somewhere, like display. Maybe someday we will.
Thank you, Janet.
And eventually you stopped doing that, and you went into theatrical management. You want to talk about how that happened? It's so different.
Yes, it is. My whole life has been very different. So I was still here designing in California, and briefly I got a chance to go to England and work. I had just gotten my MBA. Why did I need it? I don't know, but I did it. And so I wanted to go stretch my wings again. I got a chance to work and live in London, and I thought that'd be there for good. I was there for 5 years, had set up my business, and I did custom designing at that time. People would come in from America mostly to the United Kingdom, and it was a big thing for them, and I learned what image was. I would sketch out special designs for them, and I did that for a while, but my whole idea was to get big enough so I could become an international designer, the dream of any designer. Well, after 5 years immigration, they made me leave.
Oh, my goodness.
So I was back to the drawing board again. So I thought, well, I'll fix them. I'll come back to the States. I will find a way to get over there legally again.
Mm-hmm.
So I joined a corporate world, first corporate job I ever had. It was not in design. They don't come like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I got a job with a computer company and ended up on Wall Street.
Oh, that's how that.
Yes. Uh-huh. Through a lot of pushing and letting them know that I had an MBA, I'd get a master's in anything to come to have new opportunities. Well, it came up in New York on Wall Street, and I was called by the big guy back east, and he said, if you want this opportunity, you be here in 4 days, and if you don't work out, you're on that next plane back to L.A.
Hmm.
But somehow,
but did you go back to England with them?
No.
That you didn't? You thought?
Didn't get a chance to, because while I was there, I started loving New York so much, and so I gave up my dreams of designing at the moment. Just put it on the back burner. I worked on Wall Street, loved the history. Once again, for a farm girl to go to Wall Street and work out of the J.P. Morgan, that was who we were working for. It was a dream.
So you carry the farm girl still, because you refer to that a lot. I mean, is that your primary identity?
I don't know. I have so many identities
now. Really? I could imagine that.
But I remember being with Daddy. I'd go home to see him periodically, and I'd say, Daddy, would you come and visit me? And he'd say, honey, I'm not coming there. It's just too many people. But I can see it's good for you. I can hear it in your voice.
Oh, good. That's
and
lovely.
And one of the interesting things, Janet, that when I would go home in Idaho, I've become very proud.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you're away, you realize what a gift it was to be raised there.
Oh, I'm sure.
So I would go to the local potato manufacturer and get potatoes that were about almost 10 to 12 inches long. And I would pack them up, make a whole box, take them back to New York with me, and I would wrap them, put a ribbon on them, and
no,
say, from Idaho, with love, not to friends, to the big guys on Wall Street.
A corporate gift.
It helped my career immensely because it was an area where I knew not very much about. I was a woman. I had everything going against me. Mm-hmm. So the potatoes helped a lot.
How did you make the transition to theatrical management?
Mama was out here, and she was dying. So mm-hmm. I came out, and she did die. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, I'm here. My sisters, they lived out here, Lynn and Sally, they agreed that I it would be fine if I wrapped up her place to live mm-hmm. and all that sort of thing.
That's hard.
It was very hard. I felt that I was the only one unmarried, and she related to me. She was single at the time. Daddy still lived in Idaho. Mm-hmm. So in doing that, I thought, well, I want to live, if I'm going to be here, I want to live in a place that is exciting to me, Hollywood. So I came up, and that's where I made a new life for myself.
So how did you meet Hank?
Well, by that time,
I never found that out.
By that time, I'd gotten on a couple of boards. And boards of Hollywood boards. Mm-hmm. And one of them, which is the oldest organization in Hollywood, they had founded the library, the Hollywood Bowl, things like that. And they were having their 107th anniversary at the time, I think. Hank was going to be performing there. I think he did it as a favor to somebody. I had I was given a budget for tremendous, getting a budget. I had two cameramen, a videographer, and I was the PR person par excellence, I thought. So I found that my cameraman came over and he said, you know, this one performer will not let us video him. So I stomped up to him. That's how we met.
What did you say?
I said, what's going on here? And he explained, and he was so sweet. And he said, well, I do all my own material. Mm-hmm. The man I manage, Hank Garrett, is an actor and a comedian.
And somebody that everybody would know.
Yes.
You could say where.
Yes.
Well, from a lot of places.
A lot of places.
The mass entertainment was in particular.
Yeah. He's well known for several movies he did, for television series, and as a comedian. So when he told me that he had written all of his own original material, and it was always pinched, as they say in England, or stolen from him, I could understand.
Oh, I see.
And when he explained it, I couldn't be angry with him anymore. So later on, at that evening, I apologized for being concerned. And he was selling videos of some of his work, which he donates to the wounded veterans. Mm-hmm. So I said, I want to buy some of that to help you out. He said, better still, I will give it to you, and I'll take you to dinner. So I met him next week. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing does, he is a New Yorker, and he doesn't drive. Can you imagine anybody you know who doesn't drive?
Well, I think in New York, I've known New Yorkers who don't. I have a friend, actually, who moved here from New York, and she was like 38 when she got her driver's license finally. She never needed to.
Well, that is true. That's what he told me. But then as I learned more about him, I drove him for about a month because he was going to move to another area. And during that time, I thought, he is really interesting. Now, the reason he couldn't drive, I found out, was that he had been in a terrible accident when he was, I think, 18. He would never walk again, let alone they were surprised he lived. Mm. So that I understood, and I wanted to help him. And I ended up asking him if I could manage him. I'd never done it before, but he was so interesting, and I wanted to really know if he was for real, because the life he told of was like for five different people. And after a month, I realized he was for real, and I wanted to be involved.
You have this ability, I can see, of just diving into new things and knowing that you could do it.
Well, diving in, not sure if I can do it, but sure making a try.
But you succeeded at so many things.
Oh, thank you. It's been an interesting ride, for sure.
Well, I mean, Wall Street, and you did another newsletter. What was your other newsletter that you did?
Well, it was
that first one.
I was involved in graphoanalysis.
Oh,
I was
let's talk about
handwriting analyst.
Of course.
And how I got into that
One of my favorite subjects. I totally forgot. Yes, go ahead.
You know, handwriting is becoming a dying thing.
I know.
Thing.
I have one of my guests, her little boy, 6 years old, was not learning cursive handwriting, and she was very upset, and she tried to talk him into it and convince him, and he just was not interested. And she said, you know, if you learn cursive, you will always be able to read the secret thoughts of grown-ups.
Wow.
And that kid was on board.
Wow.
So I know they're not teaching it, but yes.
No, they're not. It's interesting. When I started, it was through my mother, who became a graphic analyst from the farm, and she started believing in herself. It's a wonderful tool for finding out who we are, because it's writing of bringing out the inside of who we are. So
handwriting is telltale.
That's another way of putting it. So my mother would not let me date anybody on the farm unless she did the handwriting. And I'd say, oh, Mama, he's so cute. You can't be right about him. He's not that bad. Well, if she said he was, he was. So later on, when I started hiring people, I thought, well, this is a great tool for finding the right people. And I would ask her to do all the handwriting.
So I think I met a handwriting analyst once, and I thought that would be a wonderful wedding gift to have a free, you know, an hour of handwriting analysis for both you, for each of the couple. And not in terms really of breaking it up, but knowing who you're facing.
Oh, yeah, that's so true.
You know, if you're a type C and you've got a type A, you might as well know about it right away.
It's so true, Janet. If we have enough time, I'll just tell you that my mother, finally, she said, you're becoming a pain. Why don't you learn it yourself? So I did, and it took, it's very intense studying. It took about 2 years to get certified, but I am a certified handwriting analyst. And when I got the job in Wall Street, I thought, man, I need every trick in the book. Here I had all those disadvantages I mentioned earlier. Well, I used the handwriting analysis for them. I'd say, oh, could I have your handwriting? All the big guys, because I had very big visibility. And if I did, great, super. If I didn't, everybody knew it. And that's how I learned to check out who I was working with, because a lot of times you're wowed over by the people. They're so charismatic, but inside they may not be that way, and you have to watch out.
Can you look at a sample of handwriting and see something pretty much immediately?
Often you can, but it has to be cursive writing.
Yes, I know.
I heard
that this lack of cursive writing is really hurting crime detection.
I'm sure that's true.
Forgery, you know, when you those delivery things, those tablets that you write on with your finger, that's never your handwriting.
No, it's never. And it's interesting because my sister got involved on it too, both of my sisters. But my sister Lynn became a document examiner, and she has spoken all over the country, mm-hmm. and she does forgeries. She's been in courts. It's another thing than what Mama and I did, mm-hmm. which was the personality. But it's very interesting. She's nabbed a few people that
Good
way.
For
I
hers.
Mean, help the attorneys. Yeah. They will hire them.
Yes. And so you did a newsletter for them, and you
yes.
did a newsletter for Wall Street, and then you did you got your MBA, and you had a fashion career.
Yes.
And so that's what I mean by you seem to be able to just dive in to kind of foreign waters and find your way very well.
Well, it's when I found Hank, I thought, aha, this is something I want to do. Can I do it? I don't know, but I'm going to give it a stab. And I've had a great time. I've learned a lot, and we've just formed a new website. His is hankgarrett.biz.
Oh, okay.
He had two before me, but they were not with people who took care of it, and we lost them. So we're trying to get the names back again. But right now we definitely have hankgarrett.biz, B-I-Z, which is up and running now. We're continually adding to it. Have a wonderful webmaster called Devin Tate. I'm sorry, Devin. Mm-hmm. And he's also making my website, Red Warrior Management. And that'll
nice.
Be up and coming soon, www.redwarriormanagement. But for short, it'll be rwmgmt.com.
Okay. So it's going just from all this in handwriting, because I'm about love letters and I'm a little obsessed with the power of them in handwriting. Well, if you were to write one right now, who would it be to?
Probably to Mama, though she's gone now. Mm-hmm. She had such an influence on my life. And though she was a farm lady, she always was studying, and Daddy too. He was a farm guy too, but he read every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I would probably write to both of them because they're both gone now.
And what specifics would you say? Well, even what you just said now, even though they're farm people, they read every day. And
I would say a big thank you for all you've done for me, each of them, in different ways.
Where will you mail that?
To heaven.
I like that. But, you know, it's nice to have those love letters actually show up on somebody's mail pile.
Well, hopefully through the website that we're making up in this new venture with Hank Garrett,
okay.
We'll do like one of the things that we'll do finishing is this book that
he is
doing. And that's very exciting because he has lived the life of five people for sure.
I know. Yes. All right. So that's that whole interesting wrinkle because you can combine your own love letter with what you're doing with Hank. And, you know, I always say mail it to yourself because letters to people who are gone and have influenced us, let somebody find it in 50 years. And it'll be an added, you know, dimension to what you're doing with Hank.
That's a great idea. That's kind of what I've been doing with him.
Yes.
Categorizing all of his various pictures and letters and things. But we'll do another one.
Why not?
For me, next to it.
Good. Okay. Oh, thank you so much for doing this with me. I'm so glad that I got to know you in the last couple of weeks.
And you, Janet. I just wanted to know, when I get my own radio show, can I interview you?
Yes, I'll be there with bells on and a whole bunch of opinions. Exactly. Thank you, dear. Well, just until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye. And I just want to remind you that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is a special occasion. And I have found that almost everyone has some lurking in his or her heart. It's just a matter of finding it when you feel like it and putting it on paper in your handwriting. Thank you, honey. Until next time, bye.